What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
The leader of One Nation in New South Wales. We welcome to the program Mark Latham. Hello, Mark.
G'day, Brent. Good to be with you.
How are you?
Yeah, going all right. Here in Parliament House doing some background research about documents, so there's always plenty to do.
Let's talk about the Jobs Summit. Now, I don't wish to colour what you are going to say, so I will firstly just say to you, your opinion on the Jobs Summit, the Jobs and Skills Summit that's currently being held in Canberra in the Great Hall over the next 2 days?
Well, I just wonder if they're going to tackle the real issues about the labour shortages around Australia. The real issues are, well, quite honestly, there's some people who just don't want to work. When I was in Bourke last month, 60 jobs unfilled at the new abattoir that's opening up, mainly because the local people didn't want to put their name down. They would have automatically got a job and the basic training that went with it, and those workers are going to come in from East Timor. So if people don't want to take up a job opportunity, of course you're going to have labour shortages in this environment. We've still got plenty of people on the dole. And you'd think the Jobs Summit would be addressing ways where they've got to get off the dole and they've got to take up the available job opportunities, of which there are many. And then the second one is to get rid of the vaccination mandates that are not doing anything to keep anyone safe. The New South Wales health advice now is that vaccination and also prior infection are doing nothing to stop the spread of the Omicron BA4 and 5. So what's the point in having mandates like the New South Wales Police and the SES? So there's two obvious things that would help free up the labour shortages and clear up the supply chain blockages, but I don't think either of them will be addressed at this job summit.
Mark, do you think it's a fair comment to say that the decisions of what will come out of this Jobs and Skills Summit have probably already been made by the government, so therefore they invited parties to the two-day summit that would support them and the decisions that have already been made?
Well, it looks a bit that way. I don't think they're going in there to come up with recommendations that fly in the face of Labor policy. Not that Albanese had a big economic program in mind at the last election, but I think the bigger concern is that you go to the Treasury website and they say that the Jobs Summit is the start of a very long separate process, a green paper on employment and then a white paper, which would normally take 2 or 3 years to finalise. So it looks like the Treasury, you know, which does all the work in this area, has got in mind the Jobs Summit will plant the seed of some ideas and policy options. They'll look at them in a green paper, which is sort of like a draft document that goes out for comment, and then it'll be finalised in a white paper on employment for the government to adopt and turn into policy. So I think this is just the start of a very long process, but in part it is window dressing. Hopefully it's more successful than Kevin Rudd's 2020 summit that came up with nothing. So you've got to hope and wish them the best, but yeah, we've got every right to be a bit cynical.
I see that the New South Wales Premier was asked why he isn't coming to the table with a higher wage offer, given the major train union is asking for a figure that is still below inflation. It seems as though this train strike in New South Wales is going to go on. And of course, we've had the Premier come out and say basically he's fed up. They've spent, 50 hours or something like that, 6,000 days dealing with the negotiations with the unions. And he's had enough, so no more.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the union's engaged in a political stunt. They're not going to accept any offer from the government because they think the strikes reflect poorly on the Liberal government and they want them out in March in favour of Chris Minns' Labor government. So I think a lot of it is political. But the irony is, of course, the tragic irony is that these strikes hurt the workers. Unions are supposed to be there to help the worker, but for the commuters just trying to get in on the train on time to get to their job, it's become a nightmare. And to see the sardine type environment, people squeezed onto the trains late for work, maybe some people losing their job, it's not fair on the workers who are the, you know, the innocent victims of this political squabble. So the union should pull its head in. I think the government is talking a bit tougher, and after 50 hours of negotiations, they should start to lay down the law and think about alternative ways in which the trains can run on time.
This seems as though it's just going to go on and on. And
Sometimes governments have got to break a strike that has no justification. Chifley did it with the coal miners. That was a Labor government at the end of World War II. And are there alternative train drivers we can bring in to staff these trains to get them running when the government has a pay offer on the table? You can't give everyone a pay increase equal to inflation, because inflation then grows.
Yeah.
And you have a wage price spiral that never ends. The government is heavily in debt. They do spend in too many areas. They've got $182 billion debt. So giving everyone a higher wage increase just adds to the debt, and our great-grandkids have to pay it off.
You can't give everyone a wage rise that matches inflation, because that just raises inflation. Well said.
That's the economic reality. But also, you shouldn't have these big deficit budgets at the moment, because that overheats the economy and also adds to inflation. So I think the state government's economic strategy is all wrong, but the union demands are also over the top.
Okay, let's say that it was foreshadowed that gaps in reliable supply of power will emerge across multiple states over the coming years. There's been a crisis deepening since April, when the Australian Energy Market Operator warned of an increasing blackout risk due to Australia's largest coal plant closing up, up to 7 years early. This was foreshadowed and talked about this week. We've got problems, haven't we?
Well, we do. I saw this in documents I accessed through the upper house processes that showed even the New South Wales government. Matt Keane's advisers were acknowledging that in 2025-26, New South Wales will have a reliability gap, which is code for blackouts. We won't have enough electricity supply to meet demand. And the whole system was hinging on the early delivery of Snowy 2.0 coming in on time in 2026. But it's been delayed now. It's pushed back to later in the decade. And also the Hume link, the transmission wires to make it operational, hooking in into the grid, that's also being delayed. So the Snowy 2.0 cavalry on the hill haven't arrived.
No, they haven't.
The closure of Liddell and Eraring in 2025, we're slated to have blackouts. It's an absolute disaster. And people can say, oh, that's 3 or 4 years away. But who would invest in New South Wales now? Which major manufacturing company would invest in our state, knowing that there's a prediction by AEMO and also the state government of blackouts in 2025-26? No one in their right mind would invest in a jurisdiction that doesn't offer energy security.
I had someone say yesterday on air, who would even think that in 2022, with all of the technology that we have, we would be talking about, you know, the possible blackouts in next year?
Well, because they tampered with a system that was working. And all for what? We got some analysis done using the data of the Royal Society in London that Matt Keane's carbon reduction plan, his emissions reduction plan in New South Wales, will lower global temperatures by 0.00055 degrees Celsius over a century. I mean, basically nothing. Basically something that's so small you can hardly measure it. So why are we doing this? Why have we turned the electricity grid upside down, spending billions on electric buses, billions on green energy programs? Why are we doing all this under the delusion of saving the planet when China increases its carbon emissions annually by the Australian total? So, you know, this is a policy with no outcome, with no positive outcome. So they've fiddled with the system. If you want to make a transition to renewable energy 100%, you probably need to do it over 3 or 4 decades, not this crazy rush to get it done by 2030. So, Brent, they were warned. I made all these speeches in Parliament 2 years ago opposing Keane's electricity roadmap. I said blackouts would be inevitable, and unfortunately, that's now the prediction by the Australian energy market operator.
You mentioned about Snowy Hydro 2.0 expansion. Look, there is a deadline blowout, but also at this stage, there's a huge budget blowout as well.
And also doubts. I don't know whether they're right or wrong, but serious experts are saying that the project will consume more energy than it ever produces because these pipes are so long under the ground and through the mountains that the water friction means that they just won't get the oomph they need for the electricity generation that they're predicting. So some experts say it'll be a complete white elephant, even when it comes in, say, in 2029, 3 years after it was needed. So, look, this has always been a high wire act, and unfortunately, Matt Keane is falling off the wire. Chris Bowen, the new energy minister in Canberra, who believes in the renewables myths, he's falling off the high wire. And a lot of people are going to suffer as a result. What can you do about it right now? Turning it around is like turning the Queen Mary on a 5 cent piece. It's not going to happen. It's not easy. And we're headed to disaster.
New laws are needed to stop convicted killers in New South Wales being released from prison unless they reveal the location of victims. This is according to the Dawson family. Their call for tough, no body, no parole laws. All they want to do is bring New South Wales into line and match other states, Mark, that already have that law in place.
Right, okay. Well, I'm happy to have a look at what other states have done, but I was talking to a legal expert earlier today about this, and he said, well, look, there's two difficulties. It sounds good in theory, and everyone would support it, but one is that not every murderer knows where the body is.
Right.
They might have committed the murder, but someone else disposed of the body. And the other one is that there must be a temptation for those that we're talking about to say, oh, yeah, well, we dumped it off Sydney Heads, and the sharks, you know, would have eaten it 20 years ago. So they mightn't necessarily have a story about where the body went that's verifiable. So if there's a law, though, where you know for sure that the convicted person is aware of where the body is located and can take you there and pinpoint it, then they should have to disclose that information for the sake of the grieving family to give them closure. Otherwise, yeah, they never get out of jail. But in the case of Chris Dawson, who's 74 years old, I think we're all working on the assumption he'll die in jail for his crime, and it wouldn't necessarily apply to him, but I can understand the sense of doing it for others if it can be verified and be legitimate.
I see that Dawson today didn't apply for bail. I was surprised. I thought that would be something that would be axiomatic, but it didn't happen. I see the lawyer has said they're going to need longer to basically put the paperwork together to have a chance of actually applying for bail and being successful.
Well, the lawyer says he's suffering from dementia, and he's 74 years of age. But I think the public expectation is that, given the nature of the conviction, he'll die in jail unless there's an appeal to the Criminal Court of Appeal in New South Wales and then potentially the High Court. Because it's got to be said, while, you know, most people would think logically Dawson did this, the evidence rules and the need for evidence beyond a reasonable doubt, it was a finely balanced judgment because there's no body, there's no weapon, there's no witnesses or evidence on the night he's supposed to have done this, no footage, no witnesses to anything. It was completely circumstantial. The people who said they saw Lynette Dawson after January 1982, their evidence was wiped as illegitimate. So, yeah, look, lawyers will argue about this, but on balance, most people would think there's got to be an explanation for how she disappeared, and Dawson, as the culprit, has been given a verdict in court that probably means he will die in jail, and most people would regard that as justice.
Let's see. Police are reviewing the contents of a group chat run by students at Knox Grammar School. In a letter to parents, the headmaster, Scott James, said there'd been a range of consequences for students based on the extent of their participation in this chat. Knox Grammar School have a track record at trying to sweep things under the carpet, don't they, Mark?
Yes, yeah, several years ago they had serious allegations and evidence of child sexual abuse and pedophilia. And that was brought shame to that school. It's a school on Sydney's Upper North Shore that charges $35,000 a year. So, you know, this is at the posh end of private schools, and it beggars belief how students could be saying the things. Anyone who's read the Daily Telegraph today, I won't read out the details, but it's beyond sickening. It's beyond making your stomach turn what these characters have been up to. It's pure evil, the things that they've been saying. And Brent, you know, maybe I'm out of date, but my memory of school, and I've got to say more recently in raising a family, I just find it incomprehensible that there can be a school of the reputation of an expensive Knox Grammar that would produce any students trading in evil, in social evil. So I think there should be a full investigation by NESA, that's the New South Wales Education Standards Authority. They register and accredit all non-government schools in the state, and they should have a look at Knox Grammar to see if it's a fit and proper place for learning. From now and then, schools are deregistered, and if there's evidence of this widespread view and these types of chat rooms at Knox Grammar, well, maybe they should close down the school and start again. But I think there should be a full investigation into the nature of the school and how this could happen. Because I say, as someone deeply interested in school education and also as a parent, I just find it unbelievable that young people could be saying these things in a world where there's so many positive things you can learn about, inspirational stories and knowledge. How did it come to this?
Well, I suppose the one difference these days is that youngsters have access to so many different idiotic and vile concepts via social media, don't they, than what we had when you and I were growing up.
Well, stop the social media getting into the school. The parents have got to be accountable for what their children have been accessing online. Parents have got to take a bigger role in ensuring you know what your children are looking at. Look over their shoulder or go through their web search list to find out the sort of material they've been looking at. You just can't allow young people's minds to be polluted by material that kind of ranges from pedophilia to admiration for the Third Reich. This is as bad material as you'll ever find in a school environment. So I think NESA needs to investigate and publish a report as to what's gone on, and the school needs to be accountable. It's much more than blaming a few bad apples or saying, oh, these are young kids who got carried away. I think there's a fundamental problem there that needs a thorough investigation.
I agree with you. The journalist that actually broke this story, I heard him say earlier this morning, Mark, that what the paper has published is nowhere near some of the worst things that were up on these chat sites. He in fact referred to what has been published as the G-rated version of what was there.
Really? Well, that warrants a thorough investigation. And quite frankly, if this is what a certain school does for young people and their values and attitudes in life, we're better off without that school.
If this is
widespread at Knox Grammar, then we're better off without that type of school. And the management, the leadership of that school has got to take some responsibility for how this sort of thing can be in the minds of young people when education otherwise should be such a magnificently inspirational and positive experience.
Well said. Well, love you and leave you there. Let you get back to work. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. We love it each and every Thursday. Have a good week. Look after yourself. Stay healthy, and we'll talk to you next Thursday.
You too. It's good to have you back, Brent.
Thanks, Mark. See you, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers.